What's this like in this state that you care so much about to bring him a championship?
You know, we love the state of Louisiana. I love this team. One team, one heartbeat, this coaching staff. Everybody that bled the purple and gold, the great state of Louisiana. This is for everybody. One team, one heartbeat, baby.
You heard Coach O. The LSU Tigers are national champions. Overcoming a slow start and injury scare to annihilate Clemson's defense. How do they do it? And did Joe Burrow just finish the greatest season in college football history? Then, why Major League Baseball cracked down on the Houston Astros, who fired their GM and manager? And what's next in baseball's sign-stealing scandal? I'm Ina Kimes. It's Tuesday, January 14th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business. Mike, you're in New Orleans. LSU just won the national championship. What was the walk from the Superdome to your hotel like?
I think just by merely walking through that, I can no longer claim sobriety as a part of this podcast at this point.
Mike Golic Jr. is a college football analyst. You can hear him every weekday morning on Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio.
I saw LSU fans riding double-decker bicycles. There's a lot of noise. I saw indoor fireworks tonight. All in all, it's about what you'd expect for the biggest party for the best team in college football in this particular city.
So for a game that a lot of people predicted correctly would become a bit of a score fest, the championship actually began pretty slowly because of the two defenses, Mike. LSU got pinned next to its own end zone twice. Clemson struck first with quarterback Trevor Lawrence running in for a touchdown.
Lawrence has still got it. He's got a stand-up touchdown. And the Clemson Tigers draw first blood in the Superdome.
LSU did score in the first quarter, but at the end, it was only 7-7. How was Clemson able to bottle up Joe Burrow early on?
It was, and I have to give our friend and colleague Dan Orlovsky credit for this, a set of Star Wars-level blitzes from Clemson defensive coordinator Brent Venables. The job that he did going into this game, and we were certainly well acquainted, and people getting ready for the NFL draft will become even better acquainted with Isaiah Simmons and what a great chess piece he is. But I think within the first two drives of the game, he may have lined up at every position on defense and coached a few downs. And that level of movement, of complete mastery of blitz packages from Brent Venables really had Joe Burrow kind of searching for answers that weren't there. He wasn't very well protected really throughout the majority of the game. And so that adjustment period, I think, really explained a lot of what we saw in that first quarter.
So, Mike, Clemson actually pulled ahead 17-7 at one point. That was the score in this football game at one point, 17-7. But then Joe Burrow and the LSU offense caught fire like we've seen them do so many times this year and scored 21 unanswered points. What got them rolling?
Exploiting matchups. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, we know had been great all year, but seeing Clemson really go back to what their bread and butter was, that five wide spread out personnel, getting Clyde Edwards-Helaire, their great running back and pass catcher, out there sort of as a chess piece to give information back to their quarterback out near the sideline, figuring out, okay, are we going to get Isaiah Simmons, their safety, Tanner Muse, one of these linebackers running with him so that Joe Burrow could see what was going on with the rest of this group up front. Again, the protection really didn't improve much over the night, but they were able to get Ja'Marr Chase in some pretty favorable matchups on the outside, and it really, for the stretch run of, I think, changed this game, was as simple as the LSU receivers being able to win their one-on-one matchups on the outside and Joe Burrow doing what he had done the entire season, especially in big games, which is put the ball in unbelievable catch, run after the catch positions for his receivers and let them make plays.
I agree with you that the protection didn't really improve as the game went on. There were so many plays, Mike, where, you know, the LSU was in empty and Joe Burrow seemed to be just a split second from getting drilled. In some cases, he did get drilled. And at halftime, he was on his stationary bike, a visual that I imagine made hundreds of thousands of Cincinnati Bengals fans collectively keel over. We were hearing reports at one point that he might have a rib injury.
He was just close enough for me to touch as he went off the sideline, and he was gasping like, like, that's my sound effect for you. He could not catch his breath, and I overheard him saying to somebody, I hope I didn't just break a rib.
On the field, coming out of the half, did you see any signs that Burrow was hurt early on?
Oh, yeah, you could tell a definite difference in the way he was carrying himself, really going all the way back to that quarterback draw that was called on 3rd and 10 with no timeouts left at the end of the first half, where I think that was the shot that he took. And there were reports that he came back over to the sideline and was really short of breath. And at the start of the second half, we saw what had been all year a fearless Joe Burrow, a guy who had moved around so deftly in pockets as they're collapsing, navigating all these bodies, start to actually look like he was taking his own safety into account for the first time. And you kept waiting around to see what the adjustments were. And instead, the adjustment was, this kid's just going to go out there and be tougher than everybody. I think one screen pass was about all we saw that indicated that Joe Brady and the rest of this offensive coaching staff were maybe starting to think of ways to get the ball out of Joe's hands quicker. Other than that, it was more of the same. And a quarterback just continuing to add to the folklore in that moment.
Right, he continued to run the ball in the second half, which, Mike, no one is going to say this, but he's sneaky athletic.
Kid can scoot.
So the second half was a story of total domination, not only by LSU's offense, but also the defense, which really stifled Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he had a number of uncharacteristic overthrows and then ultimately fumbled with less than 4 minutes left, basically putting the game on ice. What impressed you about LSU's defense?
I think just how fast they looked at really every level of that defense. And the story of their defense down the stretch of the season, especially in the last 5 to 6 games, had been the health of that secondary overall. I think that unit's prowess on the back end, their ability to be physical with these Clemson wide receivers, big, long bodies like T. Higgins and Justin Ross, who we saw get pushed around a little bit in the Ohio State game in the semifinal matchup, got a little bit of that same action from this group in the secondary, and it allowed Kalaivon Chaisson and the rest of this group up front to then start to get some of that pressure you were mentioning towards the middle and end of the second half there, when they really started to tee off and make Trevor uncomfortable in the pocket. So the speed of LSU's secondary, again, being able to make these wide receivers uncomfortable and get off their timing, was beyond impressive.
So Joe Burrow set a number of records tonight. He threw the most passing touchdowns in a single season in FBS history. He's responsible for the most touchdowns in a title game, period, and also threw for the most yards in a championship. Basically every record, Mike. Do you think this will go down as the greatest season by a quarterback in college football history? And spoiler alert, folks, what will the Cincinnati Bengals be getting in him if they draft him first overall?
Yeah, so starting with the season as a whole, that was really the talk of basically everyone leaving the stadium, everyone associated with our network and otherwise, was, did we just witness wire to wire the best college football season? Maybe I'd buy any player ever, forget just any quarterback. And I know we've had this discussion a lot lately about what Cam Newton put together with that Auburn team back in 2010. Just having so little around him, I think, is the difference. In terms of overall production, it's so rare to see anything like this. And Mina, we see so many of these spread offenses, the air raid principles that have really matriculated their way up from college to the NFL. But to see the just pinpoint accuracy that Joe Burrow brought to the table, that lethal level of being able to put the ball in uncommon places for a college quarterback especially, I think really separates it. The numbers, I mean, no SEC quarterback had thrown for even 4,500 yards in a season before we saw what Joe Burrow did with over 5,600 this year. So I think it is one of the most singularly dominant seasons by any player ever at the college level. And so what Cincinnati gets is a bit of an anomaly, right? We got a chance on Golic and Wingo to talk to Todd McShay, one of our draft analysts, who said there are some personnel departments in the NFL that are pretty blown away by what they've seen. I mean, this is a guy that a lot of people might have had around a 5th-round grade after last year's season. And now I think where they got a guy and what's going to shine through throughout the pre-draft process is just the intangibles that you get from him. Everyone you talk to around this program said that in addition to knowing you are going to get incredible production, that not so sneaky athleticism that we saw displayed time and time again, you got a level of and a feeling of always having a chance in the fight because you had nine on your side. And I think that ability for a franchise like Cincinnati, who is trying to break away from anonymity, you're looking at a guy who seems to have that ability to lift others up around him. And I think that's got to be exciting as a potential future growth point at that position for the Cincinnati Bengals or any other team that would be lucky enough to have him.
Thanks, Mike. Go join the celebration, but stay away from the inside fireworks.
I can make no promises, Mina. Thanks.
Coming up, we're joined by ESPN's Jeff Passan to discuss Major League Baseball's historic punishment of the Houston Astros.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
The punishment handed down by Major League Baseball to the Astros was the harshest ever. But that was until team owner Jim Crane sat down and upped the ante to jaw-dropping levels, dismissing two of the organization's foundational pieces. Major League Baseball initially suspended...
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Mina.
Jeff Passan writes about baseball for ESPN. Jeff, Astros GM Jeff Luhnow and manager A.J. Hinch were fired yesterday after it was announced that they had both been suspended without pay for a year following MLB's investigation into allegations that their team had used technology to steal signs in the 2017 World Series winning season. Now, the penalty also includes a $5 million fine for the team and the loss of first and second round draft picks in the next two drafts. What was your reaction to this news?
Just how it happened was so shocking and surprising because Jim Crane, the Astros owner, had called a press conference for 3 o'clock Eastern time. And you figured this was going to be the classic press conference where you say, I'm sorry, we shouldn't have done this, we feel terrible about this, blah, blah, blah. No, Jim Crane comes out and says, I'm sorry, we feel terrible about this, we shouldn't have done this. Oh, by the way, A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow, you're fired.
Today, I have made the decision to dismiss A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow. We need to move forward with a clean slate, and the Astros will become stronger, a stronger organization because of this today.
And the way that he did that in a live setting, just absolutely cutting off the heads of the two parts of the three-prong baseball operations leadership. You've got the owner, you've got the general manager, and you've got the manager. And just like that, summarily dismissing two of them who had been so integral to this championship run that the Astros had, it was shocking.
So what evidence of cheating did MLB's investigation find?
This all started back, according to the investigation, in 2017. And at the beginning of the year, inside of the video replay room, you have some low-level team employees who were in there trying to look for what are known as sign sequences. Now, everybody knows when you put fingers down, you know, one for fastball, two for curveball. They're your classic baseball signs. It's gotten a lot more complicated throughout the years, though. It's turned into not just the signs, but the sequences. And so by getting the sequence, you can break the signs. If you're sitting on the bench and, you know, relaying the information there as people were doing from the video room down to the bench, you can tell all the hitters. And if there's a hitter on second base, he can somehow signal silently to the hitter at the plate that this is what's coming. But that wasn't good enough for the Astros. And according to the investigation, Alex Cora, who was then the bench coach for the Astros, got together with some players and tried to come up with a way not just to relay in live time the signs and the pitches that are coming to the players, but to get a monitor put up that would give them a live video feed so they could do this. A monitor was put right next to the dugout. Players would be down there. They would decode the signs. They would figure out what was coming, and they would take either a bat or a Theragun, which is a massage tool that's used, and hit the trash can that was down there once or twice to indicate exactly what was coming. And if there was nothing, then they knew it was a fastball. You know, it's really a pretty simplistic thing, but when you look at what Major League Baseball had going on in terms of the technological revolution and just how much video had turned into a key and integral part of every player's daily routine, something like this was bound to happen over time. The Astros were just the ones who went out and did it and got caught.
Well, they might not be the only ones who did it, right? Because the Boston Red Sox, who are currently managed by Alex Cora, are also being investigated for sign stealing. What do you think the punishment for Cora is going to look like?
I think the punishment for Alex Cora is not going to be good. And the punishment for Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch already was bad. But when you look at the fact that MLB did not go and discipline any players, they want to get somebody who was involved in the scheme. Directly involved. And the one person in the investigation who is named is Alex Cora. Remember, a lot of this MENA started in September of 2017 when the New York Yankees called Major League Baseball and said, we believe that the Boston Red Sox are using an Apple Watch to relay something to their bench. And MLB did an investigation, and indeed, the Red Sox had been using an Apple Watch. So September 15th, 2017, Rob Manfred sends out a strongly worded memo to teams saying any future nefariousness when it comes to technology being used is going to be dealt with harshly. And so to have that team that was involved in the Apple Watch scandal then go out the next year and allegedly use the video replay room to decode signs, for Alex Cora to be right in the middle of that too, a year suspension is going to look light. And you wonder if in the end they're going to try and set the biggest example with him and potentially give him a lifetime ban.
One of the Astros players mentioned in the statement, Carlos Beltran, is now the manager of the Mets. Do you expect any consequences for him or really any of the players involved in this?
There will be no consequences for the players, which is the really interesting part of this. You know, this gets compared to performance-enhancing drugs, which I actually think there's a pretty decent comparison there in that everybody who was doing this knew that it was wrong, but they still decided to do it because what were the consequences going to be? So when you have players who feel like they can operate almost with impunity, they're going to push the envelope on things. And Carlos Beltran falls into that awfully awkward area where, despite his presence in these meetings where they decided to figure out how to steal signs and relay them to hitters, he's now the manager of the New York Mets. And Major League Baseball is not going to come in and discipline Carlos Beltran, but you wonder how the New York Mets, if AJ Hinch is fired, if Alex Cora is disciplined and or fired, are going to look at having a manager who is as involved as Beltran may have been and keeping him out there. It might be a hard thing for the Mets to do just in terms of how they look to the public. I mean, the optics on that are not great.
Do you think this punishment will deter teams and players from resorting to similar methods of cheating going forward?
I think in the short term, it's probably going to work. And I think it's going to work in concert with new rules from Major League Baseball that do something to prohibit the watching of live video, because that's a lot of where this stems from. But I ask you this question, and this, Mina, is not a rhetorical question. I think this is something that all of us who have ever thought, if we're running a team, what lengths would we go to win a championship? And I think if you were to offer a fired general manager, a fired manager, a $5 million penalty, and two first and two second round picks lost to an owner in exchange for a championship, 30 of 30 would make that trade.
Well, Jeff, a lot of fans, especially here in Los Angeles, are wondering why baseball didn't vacate the 2017 Astros World Series. Why do you think that is?
I think because that is a Pandora's box that they do not want to open. Let's say hypothetically that they vacate the championship. Are they going to award it to the Dodgers then? Or are they just going to say that there wasn't a champion that year? I think history will look back at the 2017 Astros and place an invisible asterisk alongside that championship. And part of me wonders, after the investigation into the Red Sox is complete, whether the same thing is going to be next to them. We're talking about two of the last three World Series champions that are going to be looked at by history questioning whether they should have been champions. In the end, I think this is going to be a pretty seminal moment for this era of baseball and really for Rob Manfred's tenure. Did he do enough? Did he crack down enough to dissuade people from doing this in the future? Because technology is only going to get better. Teams are only going to get smarter. And the idea that something like this is going to be enough, I'm just not sure that that's the case.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thanks, Mina.
Coming up, why there's even more of a reason now to watch the NHL's All-Star festivities. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/pass the protection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now's your opportunity to get both. The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/pass the protection. Here's another story I want you to know. ESPN hockey writer and friend of the program, Emily Kaplan, just reported that next week's NHL All-Star Game will once again feature female players, but with a new twist. For the first time ever, the league's All-Star festivities will feature a 3-on-3 women's game, possibly pitting the U.S. against Canada, which, if you don't know, is one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports. Now, this is exciting news for fans of women's hockey, but it comes with a bit of controversy. According to Kaplan, the female players who will be competing next weekend, all Olympians, have actually boycotted the existing women's professional league, the NWHL, because they want to play in a league that's supported by the NHL, like the way the NBA supports the WNBA. The NHL has said they will not create a new league while the current one exists, but this does create a bit of awkwardness. On top of that, There are fans who still want to see the women facing off with the men in skills competition, as they have recently. Last year, one of those female players, Kendall Coyne Schofield, participated in the fastest skater competition and created a viral moment.
This is the first time for Kendall Coyne Schofield.
Oh boy, look at that stride. Talk about no fear around the corners. Fantastic.
And Brianna Decker, who dominated in the passing challenge, was so good, there was a social media campaign to get her prize money, even though she wasn't formally competing. That said, as Kaplan points out in her piece, while such mixed competition is exciting, it's probably more beneficial for the sport to have fans watching three-on-three play, since it's closer to the real thing. And the real thing deserves even more support, and hopefully, more eyeballs down the road. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.